Thanks a million, Eileen.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Good afternoon. How are you on this glorious Thursday afternoon? 27 degrees here in Dublin. And I just had a quick Skype online there. 29 degrees in Oak Park in my hometown of Carlow. That is hot. Let me know how you're doing. What are you up to today? We always love to hear from you. To join in the chats, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. But you know what? I had a great start to the day. Do you know what I was up to? I gave an elephant a shower this morning. I'm not joking you. It was magic. We were in Dublin Zoo because we had been doing so much chatting over the last few days about the importance of keeping our pets cool and safe. And we just heard there the Puckfair goat is no longer in the cage. He is down. And I mean, there's just a lot of chat about animals and keeping them cool and keeping them safe. So we started chatting about how the animals in the zoo were getting on. And we said we'd go pay them a visit, which you'll hear all about in a sec. But a couple of things first. Staying with animals, are actually more so insects. Did you see poor Brian McFadden, former member of Westlife? He shared photos of his extremely swollen face after being stung by a bee, and he suffered an allergic reaction. Honest to God, I'd never seen anything like it. Like, his entire face sort of swelled up like a beach ball. And thankfully, he was okay, and he was able to see the humour of the situation, telling his Instagram followers he was trying to do a song, and he was like, he said he'd just gotten loads of free Botox and fillers. But I've been stung by a bee before, but I've never had an allergic reaction like that. Probably the worst I remember was getting a sting in the sole of my foot when I was about 10 or 11. I remember it being sore. But we were chatting here amongst the team, and Kieran, our producer, he was saying that his sister sat on a bee and got a very bad sting. And I suppose when you sit on a bee, getting a sting in the bum is probably the worst place to be stung. And Emily here on the team, she also remembers being so terrified by a wasp chasing her that she nearly got run over by a bus. So yeah, bites and stings, they're not nice, they're dangerous. I got tick bite enphalitis a couple of times on my travels, particularly when we were in Asia. So a tick, like basically we'd have long trousers on, and if you were in the jungle, but you'd feel an itch and you'd roll up the trousers and you could have a tick embedded in your leg, but that you wouldn't have felt going in, and you couldn't just pull them out because you were at risk then of leaving the head in your skin. So you couldn't, you were advised never to pull out a tick, that we had to get cigarette lighters and heat it so it would release the little bite, and that you could pull them out whole then. There you go. I hope nobody's trying to enjoy a nice afternoon tea with a scone. But if you're listening, Brian, we're going to try and make you feel a little bit better with our worst bite and sting experiences. So get them in, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Actually, speaking of eating, I don't know about you, but I got home yesterday after work, collected the girls, got home, opened the fridge, and stood there for what must have, it felt like about 5 minutes. I was so uninspired about what to cook and what to have for my dinner, like so befuddled, because you just don't know what to be cooking or making in this heat. And we've done the cold chicken and the potato salad, and we've done the mammy salad of the rolled up ham and the beetroot and the scallions and the boiled egg and the coleslaw. And I just didn't feel like standing in front of the barbecue sweltering. I was already too hot. So we are looking for your assistance. We want to branch out. We are looking for your heat wave recipes. What's your go-to meal when the temperatures start to climb? 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Now, don't get me wrong, I love a barbecue. I just yesterday, I couldn't, you know, couldn't deal with kind of standing in front of it. So get your recipes in and yeah, help us feel inspired, shall we say. Also, I want your opinion on men dyeing their hair. Liam Gallagher got a woeful slagging yesterday when he unveiled his new blonde tresses on Instagram. And so much so that he actually took to Twitter stating that he didn't dye his hair, and it was just the effects of the Australian sunshine on his locks. But basically, it inspired an article in The Telegraph where journalist Jeremy Langmead bemoaned the double standards when it comes to men dyeing their hair and beards. I mean, as we know, women dye their hair and they hide their greys. It's totally natural. Excuse the pun, but I mean, that's what we do. Mind you, as we know, during lockdown, so many women let nature take over and they embrace their silver locks, and many still are. I think it's fabulous. But men are encouraged to go grey rather than head into the supermarket or the salon to get the dye job. But when you think about it, like, there's Paul McCartney, Nicolas Cage, he always gets a bit of a slagging for dyeing his hair, doesn't he? And I think, am I right in saying the large majority of women would prefer salt and pepper and prefer a man with grey hair than going the dyed route? I don't know. Let me know. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. It's all about what makes you feel good at the end of the day, isn't it? All right, yeah. So I was mentioning we were at the zoo earlier this morning. Myself, Adam and Ellen headed off to the Phoenix Park. And again, we all just had a conversation saying, how are they getting on? So we arrived at the Phoenix Park. We went quite early and it was just magical because it was quiet. It wasn't very busy. The animals were just waking up. You could see there was lots of different animals. You could see the elephants stretching. And there was this sort of, in the elephant enclosure particularly, because it was so hot even already at the early parts of the day, there was kind of a dust radiating up off the ground and they were already in the water trying to cool themselves down. It was just magical. The first person we met was Karen Carrigy, who's a zookeeper there. And I asked Karen, how were they doing in the heat?
We're lucky with the elephants. They're from a hot climate, so they're kind of used to it. But at the same time, these guys, a lot of them, most of them have lived in Ireland their whole lives, so they're not quite used to it either. But they're very water-friendly animals, so they love swimming, they love getting wet, they love rolling around in mud and dust bathing and cooling themselves down. So they're very well equipped to deal with it when it does come. So we're lucky here at the elephants that we've got lots of ways to keep them cool.
And the elephants, you know, as she said, love the bit of heat. There's lots of animals in the zoo that don't. And I suppose a bit like us, some are used to the heat, some are not, some like it, some don't. So we wanted to know which of the animals are in their element when the sun comes out.
Lemurs are quite fond of the heat. You'll often see them sunbathing, sometimes really dragging it in. A lot of the animals will spend some time sunbathing and they'll enjoy it for a while. Even the elephants, even though they like to keep cool, they will spend a little bit of time. They'll have a snooze in the sun when it's warm enough, as long as they always have the option of getting cool again and going into the shade. So they're probably a bit like ourselves. They'll enjoy it to a point and then take themselves out of it.
Absolutely. And keeping animals hydrated, I mean, that's what a lot of the keepers are doing, running around loads of water and making sure every one of them are hydrated, because it's so important. And the zoo, they make these special icy treats, and Karen was telling me about them. So they're not the kind of icy treats that you would say find in your local shop.
So we can also make them ice treats as well, which we do frequently. So a lot of the primate species will get fruit and veg frozen as well into little, we use the same thing that you'd make a little ice pop at home. So they have their little own individual ice lollies. And then for the animals like the cats and things, you can also make things called, we call them blood lollies, which don't sound that appetizing. But basically, we obviously feed them on meat, that's what they eat. And they get a lot of blood comes out of that as well. So we can keep that aside and freeze it as well. And it's a nice treat for them and they'll lick that and it'll cool them down. And it's tasty if you're a carnivore.
Well, give me a wibbly wobbly wonder any day. I leave the blood lollies to the lions at the zoo. But as we know, we all love to have an old dip in this weather, and the elephants are no different. And one piece of equipment that they love to see brought out is their water cannon.
So we have our own, it's like has the power of a fire hose, I suppose. So it gives them a really good blast, which they're well able for, and sometimes they'll run away a little bit, but they always run straight back to you.
And you know what my next question is? Can I have a go?
Absolutely.
Oh, I cannot tell you. So this was such a privilege. We walked around the back of the elephant enclosure and we walked up the steps through a load of bamboo, and up there another zookeeper, Albert Pammies was his name. He is in charge of the elephants, and he basically is in charge of power hosing them and using the water cannons. And he let us have a go, and we just doused that. They were so happy. There was four elephants there, I think: Dina, Yasmin, Anik and Kabir, and they were the happiest elephants in the world at this very moment.
Let's give them a bit of water.
Oh, look at that. It's like they kind of have to work up to it.
Yeah. Sometimes they just only like this one. He wants a drink.
Kabir.
So
So Kabir is just standing here right underneath the water spout. Yeah. So he's decided he doesn't want to shower. He just wants a drink.
Yep.
Oh, my God. He reminds me of all of us the last couple of days.
Oh, they just loved that water. They were all gathering around and lifting up their trunks. Some wanted to get wet, some wanted to have a drink. And they were just ducking in and out of the stream. And it really was just like watching kids running through a sprinkler, just the absolute joy of it. But we were also really lucky today because word has just got out. You might have seen it in some of the papers. A brand new baby okapi was born in Dublin Zoo. So he doesn't even have a name yet. He was born in the early morning of Thursday, the 7th of July. To proud parents Lumara and Kitabu, and they're actually looking for the public to name him. And he's been kind of kept in because it basically takes them a few weeks for even their body temperature to regulate. But we met with keeper Jenny Darley and team leader of the African Plains, Helen Clark. So the girls, they're kind of like honorary stepmothers to this little okapi, and they've been looking after him. Really, just the two of the girls have been looking after him, and obviously the okapi's mom, over the last 4 weeks. And if you don't know what an okapi looks like, they're basically, I thought when I went to the zoo before, they look like a mixture, I would say, of a zebra and a horse. But in fact, they are from the giraffe family. So they're sort of like reddy brown. They've got a velvety coat and a distinctive black and white stripe on their back legs. And the babies spend most of the time in their nest, where they benefit from the protection of the mothers, actually for the first two months. There are only 12,000 of them, about 12,000 of them in the wild. So they are on the endangered list. So this is great news for Dublin Zoo. So to be able to go in and see this new little baby, it was so special.
And he's stepping onto the weighing bridge now.
Look at you.
Isn't he gorgeous?
Oh my goodness. And he's
such a strong animal.
Absolutely gorgeous. Look at the size of his ears. And he won't really stray too much from the nest.
About 6 weeks, first 6 weeks, they stuck to the nest, really.
Now, you can open his potter around with the mother.
Okay.
Get a drink, and then he might bounce around, exercise himself, and then...
There's plenty of life in him, I must say.
When he was first born, how long before he stood on his little feet?
He was trying after 12 minutes to get his feet. I couldn't believe it, you know, so... You hope that they're standing within a half an hour, but he was really trying. And then he was looking for food within the first hour.
It's hard to believe there's only about 12,000 of them left in the wild.
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
Very hard to keep track of the numbers because they're found in such dense forest.
Mm.
And they reckon that, you know, the stripes on the mother's bum, that helps the calf to follow them in this really dark forest, and for animals to find each other as well.
Oh, it was such a lovely morning, and thanks to everybody at Dublin Zoo. Like I mentioned, there is a chance to name the new okapi, which you can see over on the Radio 1 Instagram page now if you want to go and have a look. And they say the name has to reflect the okapi's Democratic Republic of Congo's origins. So go have a little research on that. And you can enter the competition at dublinzoo.ie/competition, and the lucky winner will be announced on the Dublin Zoo's social channels when the competition closes on September 9th. But as I said, great morning. And yeah, just a tip, if you want to go, you want to bring the kids, get there early, because the animals are all just waking up, and it's a magical time. So really lovely morning, and really enjoyed that. Okay, let me tell you about our quiz today. Yes, we are reeling in the years, and we have gathered up sounds and clips from over the years and decades, including songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And we are looking for two people to come on and answer three questions each. You know the rules at this stage. We can play you a short clip, which gets you 2 points, and a long clip will get you 1 point. So 2 points for a short, one for a long. If you're brave enough to take part today, let me tell you about the prize to tempt you to pick up the phone. You could be winning 2 nights bed and breakfast with one dinner for two adults sharing in a 4-star hotel in the iNua collection. So they have got hotels right across the country, from Kilkenny's Chic Hibernian Hotel to Dundalk's Fairways Hotel. There's the Tullamore Court Hotel, the Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan, or any of the Radisson Blu hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. So something for everybody to enjoy, from overnight getaways and spa treatments to elegant afternoon teas or a delicious meal in one of the many restaurants. So you can check them out, inua.ie. And what we want to know today is, whereabouts is Dublin Zoo located? Give us a call now on 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925. Whereabouts in Dublin is Dublin Zoo located? And we will get two players up on the line after 4 o'clock. All right, we are going to go down the corridor here to Studio 8 because we are joined by the fabulously talented group Celtic Woman. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hey, you're all there. Muireann, I think you've been nominated to be the chatter to me today. Tell us who's in studio.
Well, I have myself here. I have Chloe Agnew next to me, Megan Walsh, Tara McNeil, and our fabulous accompanist, Lloyd Butler. Here.
Lovely. So how have things been? Are you all on the move again? Are you back on the road?
Do you know what? We've had such a lovely little bit of a siesta after the 3.5 months over in the US doing our North American and Canadian tour. So it's actually kind of our first time since the beginning of June, kind of getting back in touch and seeing each other again, which has been great. And it's just lovely to get to sing together again. It's mad how quickly time flies. I mean, when we were in America, we were talking about the Irish shows as if it was kind of next year, and now all of a sudden we're at that nearly that date, so it's just really exciting.
Yeah, and I mean, tell us, because I was going through your CVs, it's pretty impressive when you put all of you together.
Yeah, oh well, thank you so much. Well, we all come from kind of very different backgrounds, which is kind of really beautiful when we all come together as part of Celtic Woman, kind of each bring our own bit of individuality. I suppose my background primarily would have been in classical singing. I studied at the Cork School of Music and then went on to study musical theatre at the Royal Academy of Music in London. And then Megan Walsh.
Yeah, I studied classical singing in the Royal Academy in London as well. And I also love a bit of musical theatre too sometimes.
Good. And Chloe, is Chloe there?
Hi, Catherine. Yes, yeah, indeed. I was born into the business pretty
you
much.
You were.
Was very lucky to be one of the original Celtic Women back when we started in 2004. And it was the best part of 10 years of my life. And I moved out to do my own thing, my solo thing. And I was thrilled when they asked me to come back and do the reunion tour in 2020, which we got 12 shows into. And then the rest is history.
Was it, yeah.
But obviously when they asked me to do this Postcards from Ireland project, I was thrilled at the opportunity to come back and join the girls. And we've just had the best couple of months out on the road, back touring. And yeah, it's so exciting to be on home turf. There's nothing like a show in front of your own people.
In front of your own, yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned Postcards from Ireland there. That's the new album. Tell us about it.
Yeah, we had an absolutely fantastic time. We just feel so blessed to have been able to record this album and special kind of during a lockdown. It was it was a really special experience. We got to travel around Ireland, seeing all of these incredible places. The Burren, we went to Killarney, actually quite near where we would be performing next week. And we got to experience them, first of all, in like extreme sunshine, which is like unheard of. We were two weeks
unusual.
And we were 2 weeks filming. So it was just spectacular weather. And of course, because we were still in a lockdown, a little bit of a silver lining was that it was just absolutely almost abandoned. There was no tourists whatsoever. But as I say, we did perform. Our fantastic violinist Tara McNeil here performed in Muckra's house, and we will be performing just across the road next week, which is really exciting.
Yeah, you're in the INEC in the Gleneagle Hotel in Killarney the 18th, 19th, 20th of August.
We are indeed, yes. So we perform in Derry in the Millennium Forum tomorrow, which is really exciting because it's our first time performing in Derry and also in the INEC. So, and it's just really exciting for us. It's been a long time since Celtic Women have performed on home soil. So it's just really special. And I suppose for us performing in the States and in the wider parts of the world, it's absolutely incredible. But it's so rare for our families to get to see the shows.
Yes.
Our parents and loved ones are absolutely thrilled that they'll get to experience it firsthand.
Yeah, I know Darren Holden from the High Kings, and I think they're just back from touring in the States. And, you know, he always says the same thing. I mean, there's such a huge love and a huge audience in the States for
absolutely.
You guys and for the Irish bands. But to come home and perform, there's nothing like it.
It really is so special, yeah.
Let's hear you in action, girls. What are you going to do this morning or this afternoon for us?
We are going to perform an arrangement of Danny Boy, which will actually feature in our show Postcards from Ireland as well. So we're thrilled to be able to do it here for you today.
Well, we're thrilled to have you. Have fun. Enjoy it. We're looking forward to
Thank
it.
Thank you so much.
boy, the pipes are calling from glen to glen and down the mountainside. The summer's gone and all the roses falling. It's you, it's you. Go and I must bide, but come he back when summer's in the meadow, or when the valley's hushed and white with snow. It's I'll be here in sunshine or in shadow. Oh, Danny boy, oh, Danny boy, I love you so.
Wow, absolutely beautiful, ladies. Thank you so much. That is Celtic Woman, and you can find all about their dates, upcoming dates, on CelticWoman.com. Lots of insect, bee, wasp stings, all sorts of stuff coming in. So far this year, I've had 4 tick bites. Using animal tweezers, that's best, so you can leave the head, or you can leave the head in, so says Olive. Oh my goodness. Tracy in Greenhill said, my mom sat on a bee decades ago. You'd think sitting on a bee is bad. In the 70s, while on holiday in Wexford, my brother sat on an ant nest. Ooh, I can still hear his screams echoing to this day. Maria in Dublin 15 says, when I was 14 years old, I was stung on the tongue by a wasp which had crawled into my open can of Coke, unbeknownst to me. Oh my Lord. Somebody else saying, I've taken the day off, Catherine, because it's a heat wave, and I've taken a picnic to British Bay for the day. Absolutely fabulous. Everyone here is so happy and the beach is spotless. That is great to hear. And also a good reminder, lads, if you're at the beach today, take all of your rubbish with you. Ham and cheese toasties and cheese and onion tatoes with a glass of my Wadi Orange for a heat wave dinner. Catherine, you can't beat it. I was once at work and a colleague hit an annoying wasp with a ruler and killed him. A few hours later, when wrapping a package on the floor to send to a customer, I managed to ram the sting into my hand. What were the chances, said Rob in Limerick. All right, lots more coming in, but let's take a quick break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Pamela Hayden was always interested in sport and she was proud to play for her county as a Carlow footballer. But all through her sporting career, she suffered in silence about heavy and debilitating periods, which she later learned were caused by endometriosis. She says it's high time we started talking about periods and sport and those dreaded white football shorts. And Pamela joins me in studio now. How are you?
Great. I'm good, thank you.
Great to have you in. From Tinryland?
Yeah, well, originally the Fighting Cocks, actually. Just okay. A little bit further over.
Further over.
Yeah.
Well, come here. The reason we want to have you in, because I read your article that you did with Sinead Cassan for The Independent last mm-hmm. week. And I just thought it was brilliant because there you are talking about periods, which is very personal, probably not the easiest subject to talk about.
No.
Now you're sitting on the radio talking to me about it. And, you know, I think it's only when we talk about it are we going to become more comfortable with the language around it, because I think there are so many girls and women who suffer in silence with their periods, not just, I mean, those that suffer anyway, but also women in sport.
Yeah, it's so true. And I think because we have our period every month, and for us, it's so normal
yeah.
that when we are suffering, it just becomes our normal, you know, so we think that this is what everyone goes through, you know. But we don't talk about it to each other, mm-hmm. you know, and especially, you know, in our teens and in our 20s, I think it's hard to find the language to talk about it. And then when you're part of a team or part of a, you know, when you play sport, you kind of, everyone else in the team, you know, they're going through the same thing. So, mm. you know, having to not be able to go to training, or not be able to play a match. You know, why, you know, you think, well, why am I the only person here that this is, you know, happening to? I can't say this, or, you know, I don't want to talk about it. Nobody else is talking about it. And it's just a difficult, you're so vulnerable, right? It's a difficult conversation to have.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, talk to me about your sporting career and when your period started becoming a problem for you.
Yeah, so I started playing county football at 15, so I was quite young. It was different rules back then, and loved sport all through my teens. I played everything in school. You know, I did athletics, basketball, soccer, football. I did everything that was going.
You went to St. Leo's.
I did, in Carlow.
Which is really sporty.
Really sporty school, and the whole reason I went there was for the sport.
Okay.
But so I loved it, played sport all through my teens. But even as a teenager, you know, I would have had really heavy periods.
Okay.
But the absolute norm back then was white shorts. Like, there was never a consideration for any other colour. You know, I think in Leo's, the only difference was in basketball, we had a red kit.
Okay.
So that was the only thing. So, like, I would always be aware or be wary of, you know, when I had a match coming up. Definitely when I was playing for county, you know, when I had a match coming up that I knew at the weekend, oh, is that going to coincide with my first or second day of my period? I need to be really careful about leaking. And, you know, and it was always a worry.
Mm.
But it wasn't really, I suppose, until I got into, and then when I went to college, actually, I went to NUI Maynooth, or Maynooth University, it's called now, and they had black shorts. And I do remember thinking, oh, this is great. They've got black shorts.
So that actually was a game changer for
you. Well, it definitely lessened the worry, you know, that it wasn't a consideration. But really, I suppose in my mid-20s was when it started to really impact, you know, where one or, you know, definitely day one, I would find it very difficult to move, you know, really bad cramping, fatigue, and just really not up to actually exercising, especially either playing at inter-county standard or playing for my college, you know, we were Division One that time. So I found that difficult to maintain.
So you're talking about your 20s now, but you had heavy debilitating periods from the time you were a teenager, from the time you were like 14, 15. And at any stage, like when you talk about debilitating, and there were, as you said, once a month there was somebody off with periods, and you never really, you didn't know how bad your situation was.
No, it just felt totally normal.
Okay.
It was because it was my normal.
Yes.
Do you know, that was the way it was for me. You know, so I didn't think, to be honest, it wasn't really until my early 30s when I started down the fertility route and I wanted to have family, or start a family with my husband, that really the realization over this being endometriosis was ever, you know, even the vocabulary was there. And up to the, you know, up to that point, you know, when I took a year out in 2006 from playing county football, just because it was so difficult to maintain the level of performance and the level of consistency and dedication. You know, I didn't, you know, trying to keep going training twice a week and playing games at the weekend, I found that hard every month. So I just took the year out and did athletics instead.
It was actually your period that stopped you
playing. I don't know, Catherine, if that was my realisation at the time. I would say I stopped playing because I felt I couldn't be consistent and perform at the level I wanted to. And
so you didn't want to let the team down.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. And that's probably, that would be much more my thinking at the time. Definitely. Okay. I wouldn't have even thought it was the root cause. You know, I didn't think of the root cause at all. I just looked at what was happening, you know, the result of it. So I took the year out and I just concentrated on athletics that year. And I had such a relief that, like, I could train when I wanted to. I wasn't let anyone down. I could race if I was feeling up to it or not.
Mm.
And I definitely felt...
Because you ran two marathons that year, did you?
I ran one that year. Okay. Yeah, I did my first marathon that year. And I just concentrated on athletics with St. Lawrence O'Toole's in Carlow. And I really enjoyed that. And then, I wasn't let anyone down. I did go back play then in 2007. And we had a great year that year with Carlow. But then in 2008, it really did escalate, and I had my first surgery, and I just knew then I couldn't go back.
So when were you diagnosed with endometriosis?
Yeah, when I had that first surgery, they did see some, but not a whole lot. And there is that.
And we should actually, let me just, you're probably best able to describe and tell us what actually endometriosis is, firstly.
Yeah, so there's very little known about it, which is crazy considering it's so common, you know, one in 10.
I read a headline in the Metro yesterday that it's as common as diabetes.
Yeah, it is but there's so little known about it. And even the mechanism of how, so the cells inside your uterus shed every month, it's called the endometrium, and that's what gives you your period. Mm-hmm. But when you have endometriosis, those cells that are supposed to be inside your uterus,
they grow on the outside.
They're outside, yeah. But how they get from either inside to outside is really not well known, or why they're even in the uterine cavity, they really don't know.
But that's what causes such severe debilitating pain.
It is, because every month those cells bleed, just like...
So you're bleeding from the inside and from the outside as well.
And the outside as well, yeah. Okay. So that's where all the cramping
And did you have from. Endometriosis in your family at all?
Yeah, I suppose there would be, you know, my mum and my granny, they, you know, there would be a history of hysterectomy. But like, as with female health in Ireland, they don't really know why, you know, why did they have those surgeries? I think they, you know, the reasoning for that is not well known. And my cousin as well, she would have suffered similar to myself, you know, so at least we had each other, which was great.
And like, we're quite similar in age.
Yes.
And we're in our early 40s. Mm-hmm. And I remember back in school going days, there was always one, if not two girls, I can visually, I remember them in my year, that age 13, 14, 15, where they just were out, like when they're, you just knew that they had their period and they were so debilitated, as in they couldn't come to school. And it was just kind of taken that they had.
Take your paracetamol and
take your paracetamol and that was it.
Yeah, I know.
Do you know?
And like that's, but I think the realisation now is better. But absolutely, like it was, you know, you get gifts of hot water bottles for Christmas because people know you need them, you know, and it's just take painkillers. But when it gets past that, you know, when you can't manage the symptoms through over-the-counter medication, I think that's when, you know, seek help and go see a healthcare professional.
So how do they manage your endometriosis then in the end?
Yeah, so it's very easy. There's very few treatments really for it. When I was hoping to start a family, as I mentioned earlier, they put me into chemical menopause to turn off the endometriosis. That was about 6 or 7 months, and that did work. I was able to have a successful pregnancy afterwards, which was brilliant. But really, there's, you know, it's mostly treated by using estrogen or progesterone hormone, either the contraceptive pill or progestins. I think that's the majority of the way it's treated, or by laparoscopy, you know, by surgery where they remove the cells that they find. It's very hard to find them. That's the only problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just for anybody listening out there, and I'm conscious that if there's a young girl listening or a mom listening, or I mean, to know the symptoms of it, because it's not normal to have a really heavy, heavy bleeding, debilitating days every month. Like, that's not normal.
Yeah, I suppose like my whole motivation now is to open the conversation, at least talk about our periods to each other, to friends, especially if you're part of a sporting organisation, if you're a coach or a mentor, that you have this in your awareness as well. You know, that we see an awful lot of females drop out of sport in their mid-teens. You know, are periods a part of that? More than likely, if you're asking players to wear white shorts all the time, you know, and they...
And ask them to perform at optimum levels every month as well, when... You know, physiologically and biologically, that you might not be at your best at a particular day.
Yeah, I just have that realization. But I suppose from a symptoms perspective, I would say that if you're, you know, really finding it difficult, you know, even with over-the-counter medication, just go speak to a healthcare professional and get their, you know, get their opinion. I think one way of opening that conversation is take a record of your period and how it is for you, and how, you know, record the data, I always say, because when you go to have these conversations, it can be difficult to talk about. But if you've made a record of how you've been for your period over 1 or 2 or 3 months, then you have that in front of you to be able to discuss that data with that person.
With somebody.
Yeah.
And just thinking, because we're always hearing about the number of women who drop out at sport, and it's at that age 13, 14 where... you know, there's kind of a huge drop.
Yeah.
So it is about understanding. It is about opening up the conversation.
Yeah.
And it is about reassuring both the team players and the coaches as well in terms of what is the best way to move forward, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm a huge part of the LGFA. Still am. I'm very proud to be.
And they're doing amazing work.
Yeah, they are just fantastic. They're such a progressive organisation. And, you know, they've now put female liaison officers in place for all of those underage teams. So they're brilliant resources for our girls to talk to. And, you know, I see this female health as another evolution of the discussion. You know, let's start talking about it. I know for sure those girls and teenagers won't talk about it themselves to their coaches or their mentors. I wouldn't have. I can't, you know, you're already so conscious as a teenager. I can't imagine. So, you know, them bringing up the conversation, I think it's up to us now as leaders within sport to make it easier for them. You know, change the shorts. That's just a no-brainer. But also have to
change the white shorts.
Because change the shorts.
I even drove past the other day and you'd notice there was a match going on on a pitch that I just drove past.
Yes.
Bicycle shorts underneath the white shorts.
But the only reason they're wearing bicycle shorts
I never actually clocked that before.
It's the only reason.
Okay, really?
Oh, 100%, yeah. I refereed a game there on Tuesday night, under 14 girls, and it was a brilliant match. I had such fun. But both teams are in white shorts. I just think it's just so easy to do something for these girls, you know, make them blue or red or whatever colour. You know, it's such an easy thing to do.
What other changes would you like to see brought in?
I suppose it's you know what I said already, open up the conversation. You know, I still find it really hard to talk about, you know, even to my friends.
Are you uncomfortable talking about even now?
Of course I am.
Are you? Okay.
Yeah, but I think
I love your honesty with it.
But that's okay.
It just goes to show where we are and we still have a long way to go.
Yeah, and like I did a leadership program with the LGFA last year, the Learn to Lead program. And through that, it's for developing the next leaders within the organization. And through that, they helped me find my voice and be able to talk about it. That does not mean I'm uncomfortable or I'm comfortable or I'm, you know, it's still quite embarrassing. And even the article when it came out last week in the paper, even Sinead was excellent and, you know, she did a great job writing it up and everything. I'm still really embarrassed about it, but it shouldn't stop the conversation either.
Absolutely.
You can't advocate from the sideline.
No, absolutely. And it takes people like you to come out and talk about it. And it's that really cliched line, if there's one girl listening or if there's one mom listening or if there's one coach listening.
Yeah. Or like, you know, a committee, if they go into the winter and they're trying to make changes for next year, this is such a simple change that they could do.
Okay. Lots of texts coming in here. Amazing, amazing, amazing to hear a conversation about periods and especially endometriosis on the radio. I was diagnosed when I was 26 in 2007 and had really heavy bleeds from when I started my periods. We had fertility treatment as a result, but I was very lucky that I got my diagnosis early and my consultant was amazing with my endo and subsequently my fertility journey. My little girl arrived 2 years ago. We must talk about endometriosis. It's debilitating, pain is not normal. And that comes in from Orla. I completely agree. As an endometriosis sufferer since I was a teen, I gave up gymnastics as I had to wear a leotard for competition. I now have three girls and they all play sport and I hope they continue. They dislike wearing skirts at school and won't cycle because the principal won't let them wear trousers. Can we please get rid of skirts, pinafores and also put kids in tracksuits so they can be active every day at school?
Yeah, such small changes, I think, that can, you know, really make a difference.
Absolutely, absolutely. Lots more coming in here. Sorry, I'm after deleting what came in. But listen, it has been so good. Thank you for being uncomfortable on radio because, you know, that's only kind of when we do get to a place of getting comfortable.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, you know, thank
you. So, Pamela Hayden, it's been a pleasure. And thanks for joining us this afternoon.
You're very welcome.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
All right, keep your texts coming in to 51551. We've had a huge reaction to the interview with Pamela and I'm going to try and bring you those in a little bit. So thank you for those. But first, not many people have the term vibe manager on their CV, but Joe Balance, and am I pronouncing, is it Balance or Balance?
You're right the first time.
I am right the first time.
Yep.
Is from the Hard Rock Cafe in Dublin.
Oh,
and
sorry, hotel.
Hard Rock
Hotel
in Dublin. And he's here to tell us all about what goes on and what his job is all about. So what is a vibe manager?
Okay. Yes, you're probably going to get some eye rolls here from your listeners. Okay. So I'm going to read to you what I read when I first seen the application for the job. Okay. So you're ready? So it says a vibe manager, or rather the visionary individual behind energy, has the task of curating the hotel atmosphere with lighting, music, decor, entertainment and surrounding memorabilia. They are the driving force behind the Hard Rock's unique events. They are the go-to person for discovering and booking the best local music, the ins and outs of the scene, where to eat, drink and be merry, and so much more.
Love it.
That makes sense?
So that made you apply for the job?
Yes. Yes.
So what's your background?
Just music. Yeah, you know, I came from a family. My dad was a musician. So he taught me the ropes very young. Okay. I used to pack up his gear, you know, in the local pubs and stuff. So he taught me how to break equipment down, and then I got into drums, and then I became a DJ, and then I moved to New York and got some life experience.
So you're is that the accent Newry?
That's
originally from
Newry.
Yeah,
from Newry. Yeah, okay. It might be a little bit diluted, you know, just from being away
from
a little
bit. From being in New York for so long.
Yeah. We I moved there when I was 21, and we spent almost 17 years there in Brooklyn.
Okay. So who's we? Who's your family?
So this is my wife Fiona and the kids Noah and Mia and Frisbee. The doggy, can't forget Frisbee. So yeah, we give it a go, and we, you know, worked really hard for a very long time, and then it just got too much for, I guess, trying to raise kids in New York.
And where were you and Fiona both working in the hospitality industry in New York?
Yeah, she's a restaurant manager, yeah.
Okay, so you were in the bars, she was in the restaurant. That's a tough gig in New York when there's two parties involved. And as friends of mine will always say who live in New York and move back, there comes a time when you've got to get out.
Yeah. Well, we were lucky because we both had the same schedule, right?
Yeah.
So it was actually worked out okay, you know, so we would finish around the same time. So but then once we had the kids, things started to change. Fiona took one for the team and just sort of packed the job in, and sort of became the sort of driving force behind raising the kids. And I went to work, and then I never got to see her. We were just ships in the night. I was just working so much, and we just looked at everything and we decided, you know, maybe it's time to...
And it was the right move to come
It
home.
Really was, yeah. We just moved right before the pandemic. I was a stay-at-home dad for a while, which was difficult. And then my wife just couldn't take my miserable face anymore, you know. So kudos to any mum that stays at home, because it is the hardest job I've ever done, for
really?
Sure.
Really? Okay.
And I've done some hard gigs, but definitely being a parent is the hardest thing, especially when you're on your own. So she, I said, like, I, what am I going to do? I can't find a job. There's nothing here for me. I'm you know, lost. So right away, she just went on to a website and found this job application and sent it to me. And I thought it was a joke. I thought, like, you know, this isn't
the
funny,
vibe
Fiona.
The manager in the Hard Rock Hotel. So give us a typical day. What's a typical day in the hotel?
Well, you know, it would kind of, the job, it's a kind of a hybrid of being a hotel manager and a brand ambassador, musician, DJ. Like, part of my job description is that I have to be able to play four nights a week, whether it's DJing or playing drums. So typically I would just set up the stage, you know, get the music right, get the lighting right, and just make sure the place is a nice sort of comfortable place to walk into, whether if it's hot outside, to make sure the air conditioning. So there is a bit of a bar manager.
Okay, so you're kind of bar managing, but at the same time, if you walk past the stage and it's a bit quiet, you can go in and you can pick up and you can start playing something.
Or if somebody doesn't show up, I can take over and DJ, or I can... you know, we've got a core kind of house band at the moment.
Okay.
So we've got our band. They're amazing. So I'll be on the drums, and we just bring in guest singers. We also had Coolio in a few weeks ago, which was interesting.
Really?
Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah. So that was definitely one for the books, for sure. You know, because when we opened, we hadn't really had a chance to do any of these kind of fun things, because we were just at, you know, we couldn't have entertainment. So
yes,
we were just scaled back on everything, which is kind of anti-hard rock. Hard rock is all about, you know, extravagance. And so it's really nice to get back and start to feel like a hard rock hotel again, you know.
And did Coolio get up and do an L set?
Yeah, Hotel California.
Did he?
Yeah. Who'd have thunk it? Yeah. It was very surreal. The lads in the band were just like, and he just got up and started rapping. And, it, you know, it was moments like that that kind of make the hard rock what it is. It's those kind of spontaneous moments of history in the making, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, talking about history, that's what, like, the hard rock is known for memorabilia. So remind us again, what have they got in the Dublin Hotel makes it different?
Yeah, we've got a whole bunch of stuff from, you know, U2, guitar. We also have Phil Innett's jacket. It's like a pleather jacket. That's a real nice piece. And then we've got Charlie Watts from the Rolling Stones. We have his cymbals on the walls. We've got Tom Petty's harmonica. So there's some nice, really nice pieces. You know, we got some stuff from Justin Timberlake. We also have Kurt Cobain's sweater, jumper in the lobby, which is a big attraction too, you know.
And is that part of your job as well, Joe, that you, like, do you go searching and kind of sourcing the various memorabilia bits as well?
No, I wouldn't really per se. We have a group that do it.
Okay, so that comes from the mothership, if you like.
The mothership. His name is Chase. He's like the curator master. He's like the guy that finds everything and just stocks here the warehouse in Florida that they just put everything into. And then when you open a property, they'll see what they have that is would relate
would
to
suit
your property, you know.
Yeah.
And everything's like totally authentic. There's no, everything's, you know, the real, genuine, the real deal, you know.
And I suppose it's like each, as you said there, each hotel has to fit the city or the country that they're in. So how does the Dublin Hard Rock Hotel fit with the Irish music scene? Like, do you have Irish musicians in from time to time, or how does that work?
Yeah, well, the memorabilia, there is a lot of memorabilia that is sort of focused around the Irish music scene, you know, from the U2 stuff to Van Morrison lyrics to, you know, Two Door Cinema Club. Hosier, we have a guitar from Hosier in there as well. So there's a lot of stuff that's kind of close to home and local as well, you know. But yeah.
Happy days. All right. Well, listen, the Hard Rock Hotel, it's on Exchequer Street Upper. People can check it out. And it was lovely to meet you today. The
Likewise, Catherine, first
Vibe manager I've met.
There you go. Can we come in sometime? I'll show you around.
I will. Nice to chat to you this afternoon.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
I once was at work and a colleague hit an annoying wasp with a ruler and killed him a few hours. Oh, sorry, I read that one. Next one. Black-eyed beans tinned easier, rinsed in a sieve. Chopped cucumber, chopped tomatoes mixed with beans and loads of olive oil. A meal in itself, served with lettuce and a hard-boiled egg if you want to go with the full Irish salad. So says Jackie, that's inspiration for tonight. All right, more texts coming in. But first, Anish Toshi and I'm the Príomh Scéalta na Nuachtala, Seamus MacDonagha. Gurmagat Seamus, I was chatting to Pamela Hayden earlier and we were talking about undiagnosed endometriosis and debilitating periods, and it's gotten a huge reaction. Catherine, my sister, when she was, I had a 13-year-old who suffered terribly every month. Pain, vomiting and diarrhea. It was horrendous. She plays football also, and these periods were starting to put her off. Went to our amazing GP. We were offered loads of options, and thankfully a painkiller on prescriptions has worked for us. My advice, find a good GP who will not be dismissive of how debilitating periods can be on some young girls and women. And that comes in from Aoife. My daughter had needed to go to A&E with an undiagnosed heart condition and was told to go home. It was just her period. She suffers from endometriosis since she was very young and was just broken by the way she was dismissed by a male doctor. Another texter. Our club started the championship last night and we have introduced navy shorts. It's a change from the white. Some county boards have strict rules about what you can and can't wear undershorts, so we decided it was best to go navy. Catherine, I'm 46 and only received a clinical diagnosis of endometriosis. It's always had an awful time. So glad I was on the pill in my 20s. Otherwise, I wouldn't have my two boys today. Great to hear discussion. Thanks to both of you for that. Lots more, but I will try to get to a few more. But now it is time for this. Yes, we are reeling in the ears and we have gathered up sounds and clips from the years and the decades, and we have two people who are ready to do battle and show us what they're all about. What are they playing for? They are playing for two nights bed and breakfast with one dinner for two adults sharing a 4-star hotel in the Ainua Collection. And the Ainua Collection have hotels right across the country, from Kilkenny's chic Hibernian Hotel to Dundalk's Fairways Hotel, Tullamore Court Hotel and the Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan, or any of the Radisson Blues in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. So there's something for everybody to enjoy. If you want to check out the full collection, it is www.inua.ie. And the question we asked today was, whereabouts in Dublin is the Dublin Zoo located? It is, of course, the Phoenix Park. And two people to get that right were Colm Casserly and Louise Fleming. Good afternoon, guys.
Hi, Catherine.
Well, Colm, you are player number one, so let's start with you, sir. Where in this fine island of ours are you calling from?
Well, at the moment, I'm calling from behind a petrol station in Lahey in Donegal. I'm on my way from Balcarra in Donegal down to Sligo to watch Sligo Rovers playing this evening.
Glamorous! You're in the you're pulled over at the side of the road. Who's with you?
My son Josh is here with me in the car.
Okay, and who are Sligo Rovers playing today?
Sligo Rovers are playing Viking in the Europa Conference League qualifying round.
Okay, so who's going to win?
Well, we're losing 5-1 from the first leg, so it's not looking good, but okay. we'll have to support them anyway, and hopefully we can get a decent result tonight.
Okay, good stuff. And how long is that journey for you?
It's about 2.5 hours or so.
Oh my goodness, I hope you have the AC blasted up, do you?
I do. Well, I have it turned off now while I'm on the radio, but... yeah, it is blasting most of the way already.
Okay, all right. Well, listen, best of luck. Stay on the line. Louise, where are you calling from this afternoon, my dear?
Hi, Catherine. I'm in Greystone, County Wicklow.
Lovely. Mm-hmm. And a gorgeous part of the world. Yeah. You've got the beach right on your doorstep there. What are you doing this afternoon?
Just chilling out, just having a slack day, really. We were off down at Larimore yesterday, the lovely big sandy beach in Wicklow. So, yesterday is just the back garden.
Gorgeous. And the guys here are just telling me to get you to hold the phone a little bit closer to your mouth so we can hear you a bit better.
Okay.
And tell me, who is at home with you?
Well, Rocky the dog.
Right.
Yeah, Rocky the whippet. The kids are gone to the beach. So I'm really just, chilling out in the hammock.
Nice. Chilling out in the hammock.
Yeah.
Good for you. Good for you. So if you were to win the two nights away, who would you take?
Well, my husband would probably say I'll take Rocky, but
I have to say, Louise, when I said who's at home with you, I just thought you were going to say, well, but there's my husband and the kids, but the dog comes first, clearly, in your world.
Yeah, I did get a slagging for that one.
Tell me about Rocky. What sort of dog is she or he?
He's a whippet.
Okay.
Yeah, and his dad is a champion whip, you know, in showing turns and stuff, but we just have him as a family pet.
Okay.
So he's 1.5 and yeah, it's been a lot of work up till now, but hopefully get easier.
So he is on top of the pecking order when it comes. So Killian is 13 and Stina is 9.
Yeah.
But Rocky comes first.
Well, for the moment. He calms down. Yeah.
Okay. All right, Colm and Louise, do you want to wish each other the best of luck?
Good luck, Colm.
All right, as I said, Colm, you are player number one, so let's start with you. The year is 2001, okay? How do you feel about movies in 2001? Do you want to go long or short, do you think, Colm?
I am going to go. I'm not much good at movies, so I'm just going to go short anyway because I probably won't get long. So let's go short.
Okay, we're going to go short, try and get 2 points on the board. Starring Renee Zellweger, this 2001 comedy movie sees a 30-something singleton trying to improve her life while she looks for love. Can you name this movie?
I'd finally die fat and alone and be found 3 weeks later.
Oh my God. Oh, gee. I can see it. Mary. There's something about Mary?
No.
Unfortunately
not. It was Bridget Jones's Diary is what we were looking for.
All right. No, wouldn't got it.
Not to worry. Okay, Louise, coming to you. The year again, it's 2001. It is the movie question. How are you feeling? Do you want to go long or short?
I'll try short, Catherine.
Try short to get 2 points on the board. Okay, starring Mike Myers, this film was a monster smash in 2001. Can you name the movie?
Back there, that was amazing. Where did you learn that?
Well...
What do you think, Louise?
Yeah, it's Shrek.
Yes, well done you. One of my favourite movies. I absolutely love it. 2 points on the board for you. Okay, Colm, back to you. It is a music question now. So the year again is 2001. What are you thinking, long or short?
Going to have to be short.
You're going to have to go short. Okay, try and get 2 points up on the board. 2001 saw this group score a number one hit in Ireland. Can you name the song or the band? We'll take either.
I'd be broke without you, but I'm richer. You thought that I'd be sad without you. I love harder.
Oh, they seem really short today. What do you think, Colm?
Survivor.
Yes, well done, Survivor, Destiny's Child. Okay, so 2 points for you. That means we're neck and neck. Louise, it's your music question. Do you want to go long or short?
I'll try short, Catherine.
Okay. This song was absolutely everywhere in 2001. Can you name either the song or the band?
Hole again?
Yes! Well done, Louise. Good for you. That is Atomic Kitten. And that was their biggest selling single. And it was the last to feature the original band member, Kerry Katona. We were chatting about her ex-hubby earlier, Brian McFadden. But that is good for you, Louise. 2 points on the board for you. So, Colm, that means that you've got to go short to stay in the game and hope for a tiebreaker. So I'm assuming that's what you're going to do.
Yeah, I think that's what we'd have to do.
Okay, so for 2 points, this is your news question. 2001 saw the end of this long-running beloved Irish soap. Can you name the show?
No, wait, Diddy.com.
Now you're talking Diddy.com. Oh, well, holy God.
Have you got a column, the name of the show?
Killing the Scullies? No, Killing the Scullies.
Is the wrong answer. It was Glenroe is what we were looking for. Glenroe. Unfortunately, Colm, it wasn't your day today. So
no,
I hope the match goes better for you.
so do I.
We are going to send you two Ray Darcy Show mugs all the way up to Donegal. Thanks for chatting to us on the phone today. Enjoy the afternoon and drive safely. Louise, that means you are our winner today. Congratulations. We'll have to check with the iNewa collection. Are any of them dog friendly? So yourself and Rocky can have a lovely few days away by the sounds of things.
Oh, that's brilliant. I'm delighted. I love the one in the Sligo, the Radisson Blu. I adore that place.
Oh, wow. Well, listen, you've got the choice of wherever you want to go. So enjoy it. It's two nights bed and breakfast and one dinner for two adults. It doesn't say one adult and one dog, but each to their own. Listen, lovely chatting to you, Louise. Have a fabulous afternoon.
That's great. Thanks, Catherine. Bye-bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Okay, we were talking about bites, stings, bees, wasps, all sorts of things earlier on, and ticks as well. And if you want to know how to remove ticks correctly, Tick Talk Ireland is the website. That's TICKTALK, Tick Talk Ireland. They have lots of advice to check about how to remove ticks correctly. And it's vital to do it correctly because it can have long-lasting life consequences if it is not done correctly. So have a little bit of a look there if you fancy it. All right, let's get some music. All right, it has been 27 years since the iconic film Braveheart was released to cinemas around the world. And even today, the film still resonates with Irish audiences for a variety of different reasons. As we know, a lot of the film was shot here in Ireland. And I think everybody knows somebody who was an extra in Braveheart. And we have got Angus McFadyen, a.k.a. Robert the Bruce, in studio, and also Eric Lawler here from Trim Tourism to tell us all about a very special event that is taking place this weekend to mark the occasion. Good afternoon, lads. Great to see you.
Hello,
great
how are
to
you?
Be here.
Well, listen, what is going on? Trim is throwing a party, Eric.
Yeah, we're having a little bit of a celebration. We're closing off the road in Trim outside the castle, and we're building an outdoor cinema, an arena type thing. And we're also having market stalls, entertainment all day. And we have, as you see, Angus and other cast members will be attending the screening.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're calling it Braveheart 25, better late than never.
Exactly. COVID robbed us of 2 years, as we all know. So it's better late than never to do it anyway. We said we'd do it because we missed it. Everybody wants a good day out, you know?
Absolutely. So, and it was, yeah. I mean, just even when I was saying everybody knows somebody who was in the movie, but it was massive for Trim, wasn't it?
Huge, yeah. Huge event at the time. Like, you know, they had to, it took over the town basically for months.
Yeah.
And they building the sets, even filming the movie and then taking the sets down.
Yeah.
But we have also a very guest, we've special appearance from the William Wallace Society is coming over from Scotland because they said we're not having no shindig without them.
Right.
It's their William Wallace, we're celebrating.
So how many of them are coming over? Like, who are the William Wallace Society?
They're a recognised society. They can get all the information from them on the real William Wallace.
Okay.
Males William Wallace is 99% fact, you know.
Yeah.
Thing, but these guys will give you the full lowdown. And they come over and they march around the town with the pipe band playing 1 o'clock. And they go up and they retake York because in the movie, Trim Castle is York and Wallace takes York.
Yes.
So we send the Wallace clan up with the flag of Scotland up to the castle gates. And they present the flag to the gentleman in the OPW, and he goes up and he puts it up on the flagpole at the top of the castle.
Brilliant.
So then Wallace's clan have retaken York.
Brilliant.
And that commences the whole weekend of activities.
It's going to be great for the crack. And
oh, what
and a weekend for it as well. Angus, lovely to meet you.
Lovely to meet you.
It is an absolute pleasure. How long have you been in Ireland now? Because did you fly over from Scotland?
I flew from Scotland to Belfast to get myself a US work visa, and then I took the train down. And I've been walking the streets for the last 4 days.
Waiting for this event.
Yeah, but I'm also, you know, revisiting old ghosts and seeing how much this place has changed in the last 28 years. It's incredible.
I just can't
believe it.
How long did the filming actually take?
About 5 months.
Okay.
I think we were a month in Scotland, though, so about 4 months here.
Okay. And what are your memories of filming? I mean, what a character, first of all, to play Robert the Bruce. When you read for the part, I mean, I suppose nobody, you hope the movie is going to be what it was, but when you read for the part, what jumped out for you?
I actually didn't read for the part. I was asked to go in and meet Mel for a different role, which was the English prince. And I was able to read the script, And I actually went, well, and I went in for the meeting and kind of dropped a bomb, said, I'm really not here to talk about the English Prince because that's not my role. My role is Robert the Bruce. And I know you already have another actor in it. And the casting director was shaking her head going, oh, I told him not to do this. And I was in there for an hour and a half and I just said this and this. And, you know, I know a lot about it. And, you know, all the kids in Scotland learn about Robert the Bruce and that he died. And it was an hour and a half and he was just staring at me going, so you don't want to talk about... the other guy? I said, no. good luck with your movie. And I walked out and kicked myself for about 10 days. And then I went back and I was called back in. And he goes, so anyway, the role is yours. And I went,
wow, excuse me. I love it.
Because it turned out that the guy who it had been offered to wanted a role in the other Scottish film, which was shooting with Liam Neeson. And he let the date go by which he should have accepted the offer. So they withdrew it and Mel gave it to me. So it was one of those moments.
And the rest of the is history. And I mean, what a movie it was. I mean, directed by Mel, starring Mel. And I suppose the impact, let's talk about the impact of it, because I talk about the impact of the movie in Ireland. But as a Scotsman, what was the impact of Braveheart in Scotland?
It was huge. It was, I mean, there were people in the cinemas just weeping and standing and thumping the floors and screaming freedom. And the SNP at the time, who were, you know, basically were not really on the political map at all. They were seen as a bit of a defeated political force, but they were very clever. They were standing outside with leaflets with the SNP and Mel's face on it, and they were handing them out. And within 2 years, that film changed the political landscape of Scotland, because within 2 years,
there was a Scottish emotion, Parliament.
That it just shows you how powerful a film can be if it's done right. Because we had the Scottish Parliament within the next 2 years. It ignited a flame which had been extinguished for so long.
Mm.
It was an amazing moment.
Let's take a little clip from the movie now. Do we have a clip? Oh. Okay, so we have Robert the Bruce's clip, which we're going to play in.
But remember that these men have lands and castles. It's much to risk.
And the common man that bleeds on the battlefield, does he risk less?
No. But from top to bottom, this country has got no sense of itself. Its nobles share allegiance with England. Its clans war with each other.
Aye.
If you make enemies on both sides of the border, you'll end up dead.
We all end up dead. It's just a question of how and why.
I'm not a coward. I want what you want, but we need the nobles.
We need them.
Aye.
Now tell me, what does that mean to be noble?
What a scene. What a movie. Do you still remember the lines, the dialogue?
I remember one speech because, you know, it's like Shakespeare. Once you've learnt really great dialogue, you can't forget it. And there is this one speech in that which was so powerful. A lot of people, you know, still quote it to me.
Yes.
And so I still remember that one.
Okay, and I'm going to get you to do it. But with William Wallace, with Braveheart, people know his character. They know the history. Give us a little bit of background on Robert the Bruce, because you've gone on since Braveheart to actually do a movie specifically on Robert the Bruce himself, right?
Yeah. I did a film about the 7 years, which basically he fought another six times and he lost every time, and his forces were decimated and he was basically a spent force and he went into hiding. And we really don't know much about that period where he disappeared. It's the cave period with the mythology of the spider, and which symbolizes madness in some way. So, you know, I think he kind of, as Joseph Campbell says, he died metaphorically in order to rise again and become the hero that he now is in history. So that's the section of history which I decided to tackle. There are no Englishmen in sight. The only enemy is within. And so that's the story, really. It's about how do you find heart to carry on when, you know, failure is all about you.
Mm. All right. Well, on that, let's hear from Robert the Bruce himself.
Well, I mean, it's been a long time. I think it's something like land, men, women, land, titles, castles, men, nothing. I have nothing. Those men who bled the ground red at Falkirk, they fight for something. I said, what is it? They fight for something that I never had. And I took it from him when I betrayed him. And I saw it in his face on the battlefield. And it's tearing me apart. And he says, all men lose heart. Mm. I don't want to lose heart. I want to believe as he does. Mm. I will never be on the wrong side again.
Mm. And that was, Great memory. unbelievable. I'm going to watch the movie now tonight when I go.
Come out to Trim, sure, to watch it on Saturday with the rest of us.
Yes. So you're, tell us, Eric, so you're putting up a big screen?
Big screen, 60 metre square screen, right in the middle of where the movie was made, on the set at the Castle Wall. And it's 500 seats, and we've got a great crack going up to it. And of course, the cast members will be there. Not only Angus, but there's going to be Peter Handley, Mary Calvey, and James Robinson. James is the young William, and Barry's the young Murren. And of course, Peter Handley is the prince.
Is the prince. Where can people get tickets?
You can get tickets online. You just Google it or go at stayattrim.ie.
Okay.
Now, you don't need a ticket. You can come out for the day and enjoy all the activities. You just need a ticket for the movie.
Okay.
So you can still come out and enjoy the fun with the pipe bands and all the trad fest sessions going on. But it's a waste coming out and not going to see the movie.
Yeah, absolutely. And you said there's loads going on for the weekend for kids as well. There's a showing on the Sunday. You can't put up a screen as big as that and only show one movie.
Yeah, that's correct. We're having, there's a Michael Collins Day on the following day because it's his 100th anniversary on the 22nd of August. So we're pretty close to it. So we're going to have a little memorial for him starting at 12:30 to 2:00.
Okay.
Information is on the site.
Just to put people in the mood, let's get one last Braveheart clip.
Fight and you may die. Run and you'll live. At least a while. And dying in your beds many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
Oh, what a scene. I've got goosebumps on my arms. And actually, that soundtrack you mentioned there, we played that soundtrack at our wedding as well. It's just such a beautiful score.
Yes, emotional.
Lovely to meet you both. Best luck at the weekend. And I'm sure it's going to be a fantastic success. That is all we've got time for today. Drive Time with Cormac is next, and I'll be back tomorrow.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.